everyone for joining us. My name is Caroline Saunders, for those of you who don't know me, and I'm Head of Retail Distribution for Barclays Capital in Australia, and I'm joined by Amanda Connor here, and in fact, Alan McChrystal as well. So today, I'm introducing Jeremy McElray. Now, Jeremy is a director of Barclays Capital in the Commodities Structuring Team. He's been with Barclays for 8 years, both in London and New York. And just so you have a bit of perspective, Barclays Capital is one of the largest commodities houses in the world. We have a funds management team at Barclays Capital as well. Jeremy actually works in the Commodities Structuring Team. And we're also one of the best ranked commodities houses in the world as well. So Jeremy today is talking to us about different styles or ways of implementing commodities into portfolios. So looking at the full spectrum from beta allocations right through to alpha allocations, and how particularly institutional clients, which is really what Barclays Capital has a lot of experience with on the structuring side, look at implementing those in their portfolio construction and how they go about doing that and the reasons behind them doing that. So I'll hand over to Jeremy. I think he's mic'd up and look forward to that.
Thank you very much, Caroline. Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here today. I've flown in from London, as Caroline has said, and it's lovely to be in this part of the world. I can't believe it's winter here and it's so warm. As I said, I'm from London, but I'm not English. I'm from across the ditch, and it's nowhere near as warm over there. So my goal over the next half an hour or so is to firstly introduce commodities and show you why they're worth considering to add to your portfolio. I'll then talk about what we're seeing as the global trend for institutional and retail investors. And then I'll finish up with how Australian investors can access the commodity asset class via a third generation commodity index. Now, before I kick off, it's kind of useful for me to get a sense of the audience I'm talking to. So I require a bit of participation, not too much. So for those who have commodities already in their portfolio or advise that you should have commodities in your portfolio, please raise your hands. Okay, that's a good sign. And those who do not or do not currently advise but are seriously considering it in the next 12 months? Okay, I've got some converting to do. Excellent. So here's a look at what we're going to be covering today. Now, there's no denying that the past 12 to 18 months have been pretty dramatic on the financial scale on just about all asset classes. Commodities didn't escape that. But what we're seeing now is that there is real optimism for commodity prices, and I'll go into some details about that. I mean, France, Germany have officially popped out of recession. And that's kind of interesting, but the real interest is the significant rebound which we're seeing from China and the other Asian tiger economies. And to a certain extent, they're a large reason why commodity prices have had such a dramatic increase over the first half of 2009. Now, this has taken a lot of people in the market by surprise. Typically, commodities lag in the late part of a recession, the early part of a recovery. But it hasn't happened this time. In fact, commodities, to a certain extent, have held up with other equity markets around the world, and some parts of commodities have dramatically outperformed. For example, industrial metals, which have been up 70% year to date. Now, part of this is due to the fact that this recession was kind of a little bit unique. Credit evaporated. So what it meant is that people who were making copper, the aluminium, they couldn't afford to run their mines at a loss. So they cut back, they scaled back their production. And it meant that there wasn't a big increase in inventory, which is the precursor for having long deflated prices for long term. So the trend for large institutional investors in Europe and the US has been interesting. They're going to simple kind of access to commodities. Now, that's you know, a bit like the S&P GSCI commodity index or the Dow Jones UBS commodity index. But what we're seeing is that they're slightly moving away from that standard beta, I'll call it, and they're moving into enhanced versions of it. I'll touch on some of this later on in the presentation. We're also seeing a dramatic increase in the product mix, going from beta and alpha, and we're seeing a large increase in long short commodity strategies. Now the benefit of these obviously is that they can increase as prices have fallen. So why would you invest in commodities? I mean, I can show you all kinds of analysis and you go, okay, it's statistics, it's data mined, it's whatever. So let's look at what institutional investors say. Now, I keep going back to institutional investors because they often lead the way in going into new and alternative asset classes. They have a lot of resources and they have a lot of capabilities to go and do the analysis. So it's always a good place to start. So every year in March, Barclays runs an investor commodity conference in Barcelona. It's about 260 people come, and it's the largest in the world. And every year we ask the question, why do you invest in commodities? Why do you, the clients, invest in commodities? And as you can see here, portfolio diversification normally comes out number one. Now that highlights the key characteristic of commodities in the portfolio, that they're low to negatively correlated to other asset classes such as bonds and stocks. The next one here, absolute performance. Okay, so when you have a bull market, you get really good returns in commodities. And that's what's been happening in the last 5 to 10 years. Last year, obviously, there's a bit of a watershed. There's a big decrease in prices. And so this large outperformance category looks a bit odd, except for it was done in March 2009 when prices were already low and people saw, they are so low, they haven't been this low for a long time, there's going to be outperformance here. The third one, major category there is inflation. Now that makes a lot of sense. A lot of commodities go into making up the different baskets, making up your food. Wheat goes into your Wheaties, to your bread. Copper goes into production, cars, washing machines. So if commodity prices increase, it would be natural to expect that inflation might increase as well. So let me try and demonstrate how this poll makes sense by using some of that analysis I was talking about. Now, can we see this back in the back of the room? I can just quickly go through what we've got here. If I'm to say that commodities are an asset class worth investing in, I should at least compare them to other asset classes, the incumbents. So what I've got here is I've got the ASX 200. Now that's this light blue line here. I have the Barclays Capital Australian Aggregate Bond Index, which is this grey one here, slow and steady. I have an Australian dollar investment in the S&P 500, this bottom one here. And I have an Australian dollar investment in the Dow Jones UBS commodity index, which is the dark blue one. So hopefully you can see that. If you can't, I apologise. Now, throughout this presentation, I'm going to use the Dow Jones UBS as a proxy for commodity investing. I could have used the S&P GSCI. The results are more or less the same. So I'm just using something a little bit different. What we see here is that over this 10-year period, from December 1999 through to June 2009, that Australian equities and an Australian dollar investment in the Dow Jones UBS had similar returns. For the first 3 years, the ASX 200 didn't really go anywhere and then had this lovely rally going up 100%. Since then, it's given a lot of that back, but it's responded with gusto. Commodities, on the other hand, started with a hiss and a roar, wobbled around a little bit, peaked in June 2009, and then have come off somewhat since then. The grey line in the middle, which is the bond index, look at that, doing what you'd expect, slow and steady appreciation, with pretty significant increase when the global financial crisis really kicked in. So returns are important, but it's not really the point I want to make here. when you're looking at constructing a portfolio, you also need to look at the risk as well. So this is what I've tried to do here. I've got those same asset classes, put in a different graph, shown slightly different way. And we've got volatility along the x-axis and returns on the y-axis. So the leftmost point, we've got the bond index. And I'm kicking around 3% volatility and 6% return. Actually, the highest return over this period, you know, if bonds always did that, then we wouldn't be in a conference like this, would we? We'd just go for bonds. But they don't. It's been a very special period considering the last 12 months. So the next, we come to the ASX 200, volatility of around 13%. And then just further to the right, we've got the Australian dollar investment in the Dow Jones UBS and the S&P 500, both around 15%. So what we can see is that the returns are kind of similar. The volatilities aren't massively different. So let's look to the next key point, which is correlation. So what I've done here is I've taken the correlation over the same, these are all done over the same time period, about the last 10 years. And I've looked at the correlation between the ASX 200, which is in blue, and the bond index, which is in light blue, to the Dow Jones and each of its sectors, energy, industrial metals, precious metals, and agriculture. So you can see that the correlation to these two Australian investments is pretty low on the whole. In fact, the highest correlation is to industrial metals, which you probably don't find too surprising given the natural resource inclination of the Australian economy. Precious metals has got a negative correlation. That kind of makes sense, you know, when over the last 12 months, as everything has gone down dramatically, everyone's gone to gold as a safe haven. So that kind of works out. But invariably, the correlations, even the highest ones, aren't particularly strong. And I can all hear the skeptics. Yeah. It's all well and good knowing what the average 10-year correlation is all about. But what happens when things really heat up? What's happened over the last, you know, 12 to 18 months? So, here I have it. This graph starts in August 07 and has got the ASX 200, the bond index, and our commodity index. And we've got 3 points highlighted here. We've got Bear Stearns, March 08, when it collapsed. So this, at this point here, like all other equity markets in the world, they took a downward step. At this point, commodities were up at 100, up 20% and still increasing. Move forward 6 months, we've got the Lehman bankruptcy. Again, equity markets around the world took a bit of a dive. Commodity markets kind of moving around a little bit on the downward, but in general still, you know, still above par. And then in November 08, when the VIX peaked at 81, equities were at their lowest point, obviously, and commodities started to trend down as well. And this is when the liquidity aspect I was talking about before, when liquidity dried up, everyone needed to get out of risky assets and commodity prices fell as well. So what does this mean when you start doing the maths? It means the correlation, the daily returns, negative 0.2%. So that what that means is that the correlation or negative correlation is helping you even in tough times. Right. So with all this information, returns are not bad, volatility is about the same as equities, correlations are in the right ballpark to add to your portfolio, then let's do a bit of portfolio theory. Let's look at an efficient frontier. So the main theme of portfolio theory is if you add a non-correlated asset to your portfolio, then you can reduce the risk of your portfolio. This makes total sense. If you diversify, you have lots of assets, then it's unlikely that one asset is really going to markedly make a sizable difference to your portfolio. So what I've done here is I've created a diversified portfolio for Australian investors. May or may not be the perfect one, but you know, 45% Australian equities, 25% world equities, 20% property, and 10% Australian bonds. Now the return of this portfolio over the last 10 years has been pretty dismal, 0.3% at 10% volatility. But, you know, what I'd like to stress is that if we'd stopped a year ago, this whole chart would have been moved up. You would have had good returns, about the same volatility. But the whole thesis about what I'm saying is unchanged. So let's see what happens when you start adding incrementally more commodities to the portfolio. So this first dot is 10% of our commodities and 90% of our diversified portfolio. And as you can see, we get lower volatility and better return. And this, you know, you can add another 10%, we get to this point. This orange dot here, I just marked it there for fun. It's kind of like the lowest volatility point on the efficient frontier, and that's got 30% commodities. Now, I'm not advocating that 30% is what you should be using in your portfolio. Consensus in the European institutionals is around 5 to 10. But this just goes to show that, you know, by adding commodities which are uncorrelated, you get a benefit. So, how do we get this commodity benefit? Now, it's a popular perception that in countries where you have a large resource, natural resource economy, such as Canada, Australia, South Africa, Chile, Peru, that if you invest in equities, and especially resource mining equities, for example, then you're investing in commodities. And while these natural resource equities can help your portfolio to be sure, they are not giving you that classic commodity diversification benefit. What happens when you buy an equity is you buy their management structure, you buy the outlook for the sector, you buy their labour relations, you buy their debt structure and their hedging policy, among other things, but you also buy correlation to equities. So that's what I've tried to show here. If you buy BHP or Rio Tinto, they have a correlation of around 0.5 or 0.6 to the ASX 200. But only a correlation about 0.2, less than 0.2 to their commodity investment. And then if you look across the other sectors, the commodity has, you know, no correlation to the ASX 200, the Australian dollar investment, the S&P, or the bonds. So this is just another element pointing to this low correlation to asset classes. So what's driving this diversification? What makes up commodity prices is supply and demand. If there's a lot of supply and demand falls off, price will fall, vice versa. But the interesting thing is that each commodity is essentially its own market. Each commodity has its own factors which affect supply and demand. Obviously, if you're talking about heating oil and crude oil, which heating oil is a derivative of crude oil, then a lot of these factors are going to be the same. But you can't imagine that factor which affects crude oil is necessarily going to affect wheat. Or the fact that corn acreage is up this year is going to affect the price of copper next year. So what this shows you is across 9 different commodities, the average correlation is about 0.27, which isn't particularly high. Of course, correlation increases within sector. So if you look at gold and silver, part of the precious metal group, we have about 0.71. Copper and aluminium, which is part of the industrial metals group, about 0.67. Wheat and corn, 0.53. So they are higher than the average, but not, you know, they're not one. Now, this slide is trying to quantify really the benefit of getting a diversified exposure. What I've done is I've taken the Dow Jones UBS and split it up by sector. So energy, base metals, precious metals, agriculture, livestock. Then I calculated the volatility for each of these sectors and multiplied it by the weights here. These are the weights, approximate weights, about June 2009. So energy has a volatility around 36%. Times a weight of 35% gives me 12%. And so I add all these things up to get an average volatility for the Dow Jones UBS index. But actually, the volatility of the Dow Jones is only 18%. So what this shows you is the diversification, having broad exposure, you actually reduce your volatility by about a quarter, or 8 volatility points. And now that's pretty dramatic. I did the same thing with returns. Energy, 0.88. Industrial metals, 1.37. Get up to about 3.3%, and then agriculture over this period has had a negative effect, and so has livestock. And so the diverse, you know, the average return you'd expect about 2.2, but actually it's 3.3. So again, diversification actually increases your return as well as reducing your volatility. This kind of analysis works for any kind of asset class, any kind of portfolio. I just pulled apart the Dow Jones Commodity Index to show a point. So that kind of concludes a bit about why you might be interested in commodities. Now I want to talk about the global trends that we're seeing. So from about 5 years ago, when investment in commodities was pretty minimal, this is investors investing in commodities, about $5 billion. It grew pretty rapidly up to $200 billion. Actually, it went up to $275 as of June last year. But it came off, obviously, towards the end of the year as commodity prices came off. But it's rallied back up, and we're around the $200 billion mark again. What is interesting, over the last, at the end of last year, when commodity prices were coming down, institutional investors in Europe and North America stuck with commodities. They buy into the fact that they're a diversifier. They buy into the fact that they help the portfolio in the aggregate level. And so they stayed there, and there were very little outflows. But when they saw the price levels at being at such low levels as you hadn't seen for about a decade, they increased their exposure at the start of the year, and they've been handsomely rewarded with the commodity rise. So that's one good thing. The other increase in AUMs we've seen this year, obviously due to price rises, they've gone up about 20% across the board, and then also retail investors. Now this is interesting. Retail investors have gone into ETFs, exchange traded products, in a big way. When everything was going a bit kind of pear-shaped in every asset class, gold got a lot of attention. And there's about $12 billion of retail money went into gold ETFs. Oil also got a lot of interest when it was below $40 a barrel and people said this isn't going to last. And about upwards of $10 billion went into that as well. Now this is all interesting, right? Because I've just said that if you want commodities, you want to have a broad diversified exposure. You don't want to be betting on oil or gold. I view these as kind of retail, short-term, tactical trades. Let's go in, let's make some money, let's exit. But if you want to have some kind of long-term exposure, you definitely want to go for some kind of broad-based exposure. Now to talk about investor trends, I find it particularly useful to use this chart just to orientate the audience with commodity beta into commodity alpha. So on the left-hand side, we have what we call standard beta, the S&P GSCI, the Dow Jones UBS Commodity Index, and the RICI. Now, these are long-only investments in commodity futures. And for all the reasons that, you know, they're included in portfolio for all the reasons I've just been talking about. The next column here is what we call static enhanced beta, and that's where you can tweak the rules of the standard beta indices to get some outperformance. To give you a feeling about why this would happen, just think, you saw the dramatic increase in assets under management. If you've got, say, $100 billion tracking the S&P, GSCI, and the Dow Jones, there's a lot of activity happening in certain parts of, with certain commodity futures. And if you can move away from that, then you're not necessarily, you get away from paying the kind of a premium when everyone's buying and selling the same futures at the same time. So that just gives you a feeling. If you roll at a different time, if you're buying and selling futures at a different time, you get some pickup. By the way, that's largely been arbed out. But next goes to dynamic enhanced beta. So this is where you have some kind of algorithm which is applied on a monthly basis to work out an optimal kind of investment strategy within, you know, basically following the same rules as your benchmark, as your S&P GSCI or Dow Jones, but just tweaking a little bit, but doing it on a dynamic basis. And the main purpose of this is to get greater outperformance. And I'll show you two of these things in just a minute. Quantitative investment strategies. Here we've got, these can be any number of things, and there are lots of them out there. You've got trend models. One is this S&P CTI Commodity Trend Indicator. That looks at, you know, as you'd expect, trending over the last 5 months and then works out whether it's a good signal or a bad signal and goes long, goes short. There's another one here, Corals. I'm going to talk about that later on. That's a third generation commodity index, which is go long and short. And as I said before, we're seeing a lot of interest in these strategies which can benefit from declining prices. And then right out on the right-hand side here, we've got alpha, commodity alpha. Now, I call it hedged commodity alpha. And the reason I do that is because this is using the term structure of commodities, the term structure of their future prices, to extract alpha. Okay, there's a lot of jargon there. Let's do a little bit of a simplification. Out here, we've got volatility of about 30%, 25-30%. It decreases a few percentages at this point, maybe 22-25, maybe 15 here, 5% volatility here. So I think that's quite impressive. You get from a 30% down to a 5%. So after talking the virtues of the Dow Jones UVS, I'm now going to point out some of the limitations. These indices, as I said before, are based on commodity futures. And commodity futures have a term structure. They have a curve. So for oil, you could buy oil going out 5 years on the futures market. But these indices, they're right at the front. They invest in contracts which are about to expire within the next month. This is good for liquidity, but it can be negative if they're depending on the shape of the curve. Let me explain. In commodity world, you've got two kind of curves. One which is upward sloping, which we call contango, and one which is downward sloping, which we call backwardation. These are more just jargon terms. But without going into too much detail, backwardation is good for the commodity investor, and contango is not so good. And just to give you a sense about why this is, if the market is in contango, so that the future price is higher than now, and you have to sell your commodity future and buy another one, you are selling low and you're buying high. And if you keep doing that, then you erode your investment. And so as you can see here, this here is the pure commodity return of the Dow Jones UVS, year to date and over the last 10 years. And that is comprised of the spot price, if you will, so just the prices of commodities as they go up and down, and this accumulation of roll return. So it's been pretty negative. It's not always negative. It depends on what the shapes of the curves are and over the time period you're looking at. But the interesting thing is, because of this negative drag, if you will, it spawned a lot of innovation in this sector. So here I want to just show one static enhancement and one dynamic enhancement, just to give you a flavour about what can be done, how you can overcome these limitations. Now, you can't really see this too well from at the back, I'm sure. There's a light blue line, a column, and a dark blue column. The light blue line is a simple static enhancement. It's what we call the one-month forward. And so instead of buying and selling contracts right at the front, you just go 1 month further up the futures curve. And that's had a pretty consistent outperformance. I think it's had one quarter which it underperformed back in 2002. So that's pretty solid stuff. Outperformance of around 4% with pretty low tracking error too, for those who are concerned about tracking error. Now, the other one, the dark blue line, which is a bit easier to see, that's a dynamic enhancement, which is a Barclays product called Pure Beta. And on a monthly basis, we just look at the right place on the curve to get the best kind of outperformance. So it just gives you a feeling, you know, these broad-based indices are great, they do have some limitations, but there are also ways to get around them. So I'd like to now kind of have a bit more discussion about investor trends. So this is a chart showing some interesting analysis about standard beta, enhanced beta, which we've just looked at, and then long short. Back in 2007, about 80% or more was in the standard beta bucket. About 20% was in enhanced beta, and there's a small amount in long short. But if you zoom forward to now, the product split has changed dramatically. It's gone from about 60, 30, 10%. So that's really, that's a big shift in my book. And we're seeing that institutional investors who have a commodity benchmark and a very tight tracking error, they often split their allocation between their standard beta and their enhanced beta. And they do this because they have to, they're mandated to stick to the S&P GSCI or the Dow Jones, plus or minus 2%. They realize that it's not necessarily the best place to be, but they have very little movement. Other funds which have more lenient mandate, you know, the real return funds, they go more into these kind of long enhanced beta or long shorts. So this concludes the second part of the presentation about some global trends. And before I continue about how you can invest in the asset class, I invite any questions. We've been this recorded, so we'll hand around a microphone so everyone can hear.
Just a question on the inflation hedging. Do you lose much benefit in trying to get a pure inflation hedge out of commodities if you go the long short path as opposed to just a straight beta exposure?
So inflation in commodities, there's been a lot of analysis done on this, a lot of studies, and commodity beta, so just the standard beta, has been linked with positive correlation to unexpected inflation and change year-on-year inflation. If you go to alpha, because alpha is not it's not driven by the same fundamentals as commodity beta, then I don't think I don't think you're going to get the same kind of correlation benefit. In saying that, we are seeing a lot of interest at the moment in, you know, people are concerned about inflation and they're aware that commodities have this link. And they're saying, look, have you got a basket so we can get some kind of inflation hedge, a low-cost inflation hedge? And we are seeing a lot of that.
There's been comments made previously that soft commodities, particularly with continuing productivity improvements, will always have downward pressure on the real pricing over longer terms, apart from, obviously, short-term supply and demand. Is there a differentiation in terms of when investing in commodities to try and move away from that?
To try and, like, get away from soft commodities?
Yeah, know? if the continual long-term trend in soft commodity prices is always on a sort of a downward trend cycle, then obviously investing in that area becomes a bit difficult.
I mean, that's an interesting point. I don't think we are. I mean, the research I've been reading is that it is long-term bullish for agricultural commodities. And the reason for that is simple. India and China and the urbanisation. So their diets are increasing from being grain-based to much more protein-based. So that's livestock and pigs and the like. And invariably that takes their fed grains. And so with there's not much expansion in acreage on a global basis. for growing wheat, corn, and the like. But there's this real pressure on growing demand in the developing nations. Also with this essentially, I think it's crazy bill about ethanol being produced with corn in the US. Makes no sense whatsoever. Using food to produce a fuel. So that's another demand on agriculture, which is only going to withdraw supply, which will arguably make demand go up. No more? Oh, we've got one back here. Very good question. Did everyone hear what the question was? Okay. So, commodities are fundamentally driven by supply and demand. The commodity markets are around to help producers and hedgers get together and efficiently exchange products. But producers and hedgers work in different parts of these commodity curves. A producer of a copper mine wants to hedge production out 5 years. An auto manufacturer is only looking for the next 12 months about the hedge. So there's a big disparity about what's going on. And it is the financial intermediaries, or investors, if you will, who can come in and provide liquidity. So you're right that there's been a lot of influx from investors into commodities. And the question is that making them financial assets or not? Now, for gold and silver, they kind of trade like financial assets most of the time. For other ones, for other commodities, energy-based metals, it really is still driven by the fundamental supply and demand. That being said, the last 12 months, the correlation between the S&P 500 and the S&P GSCI has been remarkable, to say the least. And really, the sentiment for some of the commodity prices has largely moved off equity prices, so which would imply that they're getting more financialized, if you will. But so the correlations are peaking at the moment; they're relatively high, but I'm pretty sure they've been the same level a decade or so ago, and it's not expected to continue. Our research view is that the high at the moment is expected that everything will snap back into shape and we'll get back to be more supply and demand driven as opposed to investor flow, hot money driven. So that's an interesting point. What I've looked at here is I've looked at essentially broad-based indices, which are rules-based in terms of how they determine their weights. So it's generally about production weights on a world scale. However, in saying that, we have a product, the Corals product I'm going to talk to in a minute. They look at the fundamental factors behind different commodities. And then they start weighting towards the ones which have good fundamentals and decreasing the weight or going short the ones which have bad fundamentals. So that will automatically pick up what you're talking about. If prices in corn are going up, sentiment's going up, China GDP is going up, these are all factors which feed into whether you should go long or go short. Ah, yes. Yeah, it's the next slide. Oops. Here we go. So here what we've got is a third generation commodity index. It's called Corals. It's a product which Barclays launched back in March 08. And that's this top line here. It's a long short strategy using 12 of the most liquid commodities across four different sectors. And we've got these compared versus other kind of benchmark indices. We've got the Dow Jones UBS, we've got the S&P GSCI, we've got the Ricky around here somewhere, we've got the JP Morgan Commodity IGAR, we've got the Deutsche Bank Optimal Yield Index. So the volatility here, about 13%, 13-14% is relatively typical for a long short versus these other ones, and here's a long short also, so around 17%. Versus some of these, the main benchmarks, 20, 26, 20. So they're down a little bit. I'd expect them to be down about at least a quarter, but not necessarily, right? It depends. Depends how the forecasting signaling goes. So I'll just zip back to and talk about the Corals product. So as I said, this is a third generation commodity index. It takes on fundamental factors and technical factors in deciding whether to go long or short each of the individual commodities. So copper, aluminium, oil, corn, wheat. Now this is important for all the reasons I've been saying before. Fundamental factors drive commodity prices. And so if you ignore them and just have a technical strategy which looks at volatility, mean reversion, then you're clearly going to be missing out some of the key drivers in what drives commodity prices. So what we do for each commodity on a monthly basis, we get a whole lot of factors, we do a bit of a regression analysis, get out with a fundamental forecast for each commodity. We then do a similar thing with technicals, get a technical forecast, because technicals are important, but they're just not the main driver for commodities. So with our fundamental and our technical forecast, we put them together. If they're both in agreement, that's fine. That's what it'll be. If we say the fundamental says we should go long 5% copper, and the technical analysis says we should be short copper, then we scale back our expected forecast. So what we do is we get this combined forecast. And then the third step is we take this combined forecast, we put it together with a historical correlation matrix, because what our aim here is to produce a portfolio which is optimized in terms of risk return, and then we come out with a optimal portfolio, which is then implemented over a three-day period. Why would you implement over a three-day period? Well, commodities are futures. They are liquid, but you don't want to be doing too much in one day. What we want to do is create a tradable product. So there are lots of other products out there which say you do this, you do that, and you have these big swings in the market because of a trading strategy. Here what we're trying to do is we want to make quick allocation changes, but we want to do it systematically over a reasonable period of time so we don't shift the market, because that will only hinder our investors. So a key part of the whole designing the strategy was the risk management system. So we're in portfolio construction. We all know about you want diversification for different reasons. So what we do is we make sure that we have always an allocation to these 12 commodities, minimum 2%, whether it's long or short. And then out of the portfolio optimization, we get other maximum shorts and maximum lengths. And then on a sector basis, we can't go any more than 50% in energy or 50% in ags. This is purely so you're not putting all your eggs in one basket. The investment in these is into the S&P GSCI individual commodity indices, so standard benchmark commodity indices. And the important fact, kicking along here, is that every month we cap the exposure to be 100% exposed. So if we're 75% long, we're 25% short. It's a non-leveraged, if you will, strategy. So we're going back to this performance chart here. You can see that on a back-tested basis, it went live around here. On a back-tested basis, going back 10 years, it's had a performance of around 20%. Volatility around 13, so a pretty healthy Sharpe ratio. Now this is going through to the end of July 2009. So you can see that the standard beta clearly have been hindered by the fact of the financial crisis and the general price depreciation. So what we've done also, so we've created this product, and we've also created a fund in Australia. It's been live since July 2008. It has a Lonsec recommended rating. It's got an advisor edge of 4.25 stars, and S&P of 4. I'm not the expert on the delivery platforms, but we've got Amanda and Caroline who know all about that. There's also got a few recognitions from industry, Financial Asia. Well, you can't read that, can you? It's best commodity structured product for corals, and commodity risk, best deal of the year, 2008. The Sharpe ratio, it's a metric for it's a risk-adjusted metric, is what I was trying to say. So it's essentially the return you have divided by the volatility. So it's, if you look at a bond market, remember the chart of the bonds, and this went slowly up, it's got a very low volatility, and it often has returns which are much smaller than equities. But if you look at equities, bigger returns, but it's more volatile. So it's one divided by the other, essentially, just to give you a sense about what rate's better. Yeah, bigger is better. Okay, so that brings my presentation to a close. I do hope you found it informative and that I've adequately hit the points I was wanting to talk about, which were why commodities are worth considering in a portfolio, the global trends that we're seeing, and then how you can access the commodities market in Australian funds. I thank you very much for your attention.
Thanks very much, Jeremy and Caroline and Barclay Capital. I might hand over to David Wright from Zenith to do his key takeouts.
Thanks for that, Christina. As Christina mentioned at the start, I'm David Wright, Director of Zenith Investment Partners. We provide research to dealer groups and financial advisors. One of the things that we've noticed at the onset of the global financial crisis is that it's been very much a trend back to basics. So what I mean by that is either allocations to cash or, you know, out of a lot of the alternatives, non-transparent, which I guess is fair enough. But in terms of allocations back away from alternatives, that's been a shame because we'd started to make some progress as a market in terms of allocating to alternatives and alternative asset classes within portfolios. And it's a shame also because, as Jeremy demonstrated there, that it can demonstrate low correlation with the major asset classes. And why that's a shame is because it assists in the capital preservation side of things, which is now, I think, finally a focus of what we're doing in terms of portfolio construction. I think historically when we tried to introduce alternative strategies or alternative asset classes at times into portfolios, the mentality was, look, you know, what's the historical return profile if it hasn't outperformed Australian equities, well, what, you know, why am I sort of including it in the portfolio? And as again demonstrated here by Jeremy, when you combine them, it actually maintains a level of return, but reduces your level of risk. So I think, you know, what we really should be doing is allocating to alternatives and structuring portfolios in a more robust way going forward, if there are any lessons at all out of the global financial crisis. I guess the other thing that we hear a fair bit of is, you know, I don't have any room for alternatives within my portfolio. Where am I going to allocate them? And, you know, that is a real furphy. If you look at the structure of our portfolios, largely in Australia, we've got a very, very strong home bias. So, you know, you have a huge exposure to Australian equities, and we're one of the worst countries in the world for that, the US being probably the worst, but at least in their case, their market cap is, you know, probably close to half of that of the world, whereas ours is sort of 2%. So there's plenty of capacity for us to be including alternatives within our portfolios. Finally, just the other thing too, I think as Australian investors, again, as Jeremy mentioned, you know, we feel as if we've got resources exposure. I mean, we've either got a resources fund, or we've got Australian equities with resources, or we own a BHP and Rio's and so forth directly. And the return profile of direct commodities as opposed to, metals and industrial metals companies is quite different. So in bringing in direct commodities, even with those exposures to the resources stocks that most of us have, is still beneficial in a portfolio diversification,